Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball, and the email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Doing the Season in Review podcast series, we're on to the Philadelphia Sixers, and I say we because it's not me solo today. I am joined by the wonderful Matt Smith. Matt, how are you going?
Very good, Josh. I'm about as fired up as Matthew Dellavedova tonight.
Just make sure you're not throwing any of those elbows my way.
No, that was all Al Horford. Did the old WWF elbow drop on him. Luckily, he missed his head and got his elbow, but bang, see you later, ejected.
Exactly. So that's going to not that it really makes much difference, I think, with the Cavs up 3-0. I don't think there's going to be much happening in terms of the Hawks getting back into it, but we may see a few less players for Game 4. It's looking that way anyway. But Matt, we're not here to talk about the playoffs. Well, we can talk a bit about the playoffs, but we're here looking back at teams' seasons and looking at what happened from a fantasy perspective, incorporating what happened in a real-life perspective, some early look-aheads to next season, and where we can sort of just gain an idea of what happened. So we're going to be looking at the Philadelphia 76ers here, Matt. A team with a lot of interesting things. I would say that's probably fair to say. Let's get right into it. Getting fancy there with the sound effects, Matt. I hope you enjoyed that little burst of musical interlude.
You did. That was a perfect Elton John impression by you.
I have been known to be recognised by my ability to imitate Elton.
Bit of karaoke?
Yeah, I haven't done karaoke for a while, actually. I should go. I had a few offers from some people saying I should go, but haven't done it for a while. I am an absolutely horrible singer, but maybe one day I'll sing a song on the podcast. But that's beside the point, Matt. We need to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, they are the proud owners of the number 3 draft pick in this upcoming draft, again for the second year in a row. And if the cards fall as we expect them to fall, we'll see two big men off the board, pick 1 and 2. And that leaves the Sixers with a nice selection of guards at pick 3. You and me are going to do a mock draft at some stage with Mark Roberts later on before the draft, so I won't give away all our thoughts on that pick, but I'd say they'd pick D'Angelo Russell at pick 3. Do you have an early leaning of what they're looking for?
Yeah, totally agree. I think Russell there'd be great fit, sort of a point guard, shooting guard, likes to handle the ball. He's been compared to a Brandon Roy. He is a left-hander, can shoot the 3, can score. A little bit suspect on defense, but with Joel Embiid and Nerlens Noel behind him, that may not matter as much.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And you know what? Normally I've been starting by looking at the point guards. I think we should start by looking at the big men with Philadelphia, and starting with their number one guy in terms of, from a fantasy point of view, their clear number one player. Let's talk Nerlens Noel and what he was able to do in his rookie season. It was nothing short of remarkable, especially down the stretch. Now, he played only 31 minutes a night coming off that ACL injury, almost 10 points, 8 rebounds, but where his value lies, Matt, is the 1.8 steals, the 1.9 blocks per game. That's superb. And the 46% from the field is not great. The 61% from the line is not great, but it improved through the second half of the season. I had him ranked at 32 in my head-to-head leagues, but where the real interest is when we look post-All-Star for the last 2 months of the season, he's the 12th ranked head-to-head player. Did he surprise you with what he was able to do?
Absolutely. Yeah, he was incredible. Halfway, well, probably about a quarter to a third of the way during the season, he was basically unownable, especially in roto leagues. His percentages were hurting. And then something changed, and his run home, as you said, after the All-Star break was just incredible. Just the blocks, the point guard type steals. His free throw percentage was nowhere near as bad as what I thought it would be. I thought it would be punt worthy, but it is manageable. Scoring not too bad, 13, 14 sort of points, 10 rebounds. So yeah, he, certainly exceeded my expectations.
Yeah. And what you say there about him in roto leagues and the free throw percentage, he came in 55th in my roto rankings, which is much below his 32 for head-to-head, but he's not someone where you have to completely disregard him. So when we talk about Detroit, you'll see Andre Drummond comes in like 130 in my roto rankings because he was just that bad and unrecoverable from that free throw percentage category. But Noel improved so much towards the end of the season that he was shooting a manageable almost 70% towards the end of the season, he was hitting them with more consistency, and his field goals were going in with more consistency as well. And it gives you hope that you think that next season he might not be a 46 and 61 guy. He might be a 48 and 68 sort of player, which is very manageable. And it's not someone that you have to punt with. It's not DeAndre Jordan. It's not Dwight Howard. It's not Andre Drummond. It's someone who's got average free throws, but not crippling. And he's going to be a huge chance to top two steals and two blocks next season. Again, the only problem, Joel Embiid. What does he do to Nerlens Noel's value next season?
Very good question. I don't think it's going to do a lot negative. It could actually help him once if they do get Russell. They're starting to put a few pieces together. Russell, Nerlens Noel, Embiid. They've still got, you know, like a Covington on the wing. Tony Roten comes back. I know you're not a fan. I'm still a fan of Tony, but I can't see Joel Embiid, eating into Nerlens Noel's stats. It's not as if they both need the ball or both going to hog the ball. I just think as this team develops and progresses, everyone's going to improve. And if they can get a Russell or a Moutier who can pass the ball as well, all of a sudden Noel might become more dangerous. And then defensively, all of a sudden he's coming from the weak side instead of the strong side. So I don't think it's going to impact him too much at all.
No, I would have to agree with that. And that ties into a question that came through from Emerson Brown, who's on Twitter at Emerson A. Brown. He's got a question for us here, Matt. Is it in a keeper league, who do I drop? Dwight Howard, Andre Drummond, or Nerlens Noel? He thinks Dwight Howard, a friend of his, thinks that Joel Embiid will hurt Noel. He's wrong, right? Well, you seem to think, he's wrong. I tend to agree with you. I think Noel's game and Embiid's game is different. It's not like Noel was playing with nobody there next to him. There was guys there next to him that were taking numbers. Like Lucrachar Mabute was getting rebounds as well and getting steal numbers from the power forward position. Henry Sims was scoring occasionally. These aren't great players, but they're still there. They do have different games, so I don't see it really being too much of an impact. You'll see Noel getting better, so any impact that might be offset by the fact that Noel's just going to get better. And he's going to score more, and he's going to rebound more, and he's going to shoot better, and he's going to be in better position defensively. So any impact that Embiid has there should be offset, I would think. That's your thought process. Now, on to Emerson's question. Dwight, Drummond, or Noel? Who do you drop?
Yep, definitely dropping Dwight Howard there for the reasons we've just explained. And over the last 26 games that Nerlens Noel played in, Philly actually only won 6. So like I said, as they start to develop as a team, get better, they were the second worst team in terms of points per game at 92. So once again, if they're going to get that up into the mid to high 90s, maybe even pushing 100, Brett Brown starts to become more familiar with the players and the assets he's got as well. The sky's the limit for Noel. Same with Drummond. He's getting similar stats to Dwight Howard already. And if you want to break it down to a simplest form, Dwight Howard's going to be 30 next season. Drummond and Noel both 21. So you're going to get 10 seasons out of those guys and maybe 2 or 3 at the most out of Dwight Howard, who we know is injury prone. We showed that during the season and again and during the playoffs, although his playoff numbers have been really, really good.
Pretty good.
Yeah, but you just... Yeah, it's Drummond and Noel for me, and it's pretty clear cut.
I would say the same thing. Now, another question on Noel while we're touching on him. Vivek, our good friend Vivek on Twitter, at VP90244. How early is it to draft Noel and still be considered great value? I hope he's there in the third round. Well, it is a tough one. As I said, his post-All-Star ranking of 12 is high, obviously, but for... I don't see any reason that he can't put up those similar sort of numbers that he put up post All-Star break. Doesn't mean he's going to be... He picked at 12. He probably won't be picked at 12. But I think that you will not see him outside the top 30. Isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, at the moment, I've probably got him in a late second, early third sort of spot, right around that turn. Just a great sort of guy to pair with a Curry, a Harden, a Westbrook, so you can counteract that lack of scoring. And also his below average free throw percentage. We said it's not punt worthy, but if you pair him with a Harden or Westbrook, you can still maintain that and keep a strong free throw percentage. So yeah, if I had one of those point guards early, Tate Nerlens, probably even with my second pick to make sure I grab him, and then And then, yeah, you've still got some other good guys there at three. He's going to be right in that mix with Drummond, as we mentioned, Rudy Gobert.
That's a good question. Do you take him above Gobert?
DeAndre Jordan. Do I take him over Gobert?
Yep.
It's going to be super close. It's probably going to depend on who I take with pick one, just in terms of team build and strategy. Gobert's going to get more rebounds. If I do get maybe a Westbrook and you get that extra steals, you may not need Nerlens Noel as much, because those two steals are going to come in really handy. If you're getting, who's another guy, maybe like a Kevin Durant, and you do need some more steals, maybe Nerlens, but right there, it's not going to matter. It's not going to make or break your season, but they're both going to be right around that mark.
That's probably accurate that it's either one of those guys will be a pretty good selection. I'd say I'd probably have Noel slightly ahead of Gobert, but it's going to be close. They'll probably be next to each other, 24, 25, 27, 28, whatever it is. I think they'll be pretty close to each other. Enough Nerlens Noel talk. Let's look at some of their other big men that played. Not much to really talk about here. Henry Sims started quite a few games, and he was serviceable. I think that's fair to say. He was a really decent roto player because of his percentages. I think he's a guy who generally can shoot the ball as a free throw shooter pretty well. 47 from the field, 77 from the line. He only played 19 minutes a game, 8 points, 5 rebounds, half a steal, half a block. Not much. Ranked of 210 in head-to-head and 181 in roto. That's okay, but it's nothing spectacular. With Embiid coming back, though, we're not going to see anything from Sims this season, so there's no chance of him breaking out or getting better, is there?
No, there's not. He's actually a restricted free agent as well, so he may not even be back with Philly next season.
That's exactly right. Another guy who may not be back with Philly is Thomas Robinson, who's an unrestricted free agent and one of the bigger draft busts in recent memory. He put together a decent last month, ranked 184th, but it's not enough. It's not enough for them to look at him and go, yeah, he's going to be a key piece. He only played 15 minutes a game. 5.5 rebounds in 15 minutes is pretty good. I think we can all say that. But the thing is, he doesn't do much else apart from score and rebound. And even if he goes to a situation where he gets 25 minutes a game, he's just not going to be a fantasy star. I think the time for him being able to live up to that draft status in the league is done. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and just going back to Embiid, if like Henry Sims couldn't get 20 minutes this season, Thomas Robinson came across and got 18, so I can't see that increasing now with Embiid starting at centre, so there's not going to be any more fantasy value there.
No, agreed. If they sign, I would say they'd probably give Sims a qualifying offer. Robinson, I don't think they'll bring back. They just didn't seem that excited in him. Like they had opportunities to give him decent minutes towards the end of the season when they claimed him off waivers, but they didn't. They just didn't like what they were seeing. He would play energy minutes off the bench for a team that was crying out for someone to play next to Nerlens Noel, and he wasn't able to do it. So I don't think they're going to say, we had a look at him, it didn't work out, see you later. So there's nothing to be gained from holding on to him in a dynasty-type format. A guy who is a little bit interesting, a little, is Furkan Aldemir. Matt, a guy who showed glimpses at times. Look, his numbers do not jump off the page at all. The last month, he ranked 302nd. He was a per-game rank of 336. Nothing too exciting. 2 points, 4 rebounds in 13 minutes, half a steal, half a block. But those numbers extrapolated out become okay. And he had some decent performances. And I think there's a little bit there with him. We'd have to be talking deep leagues for him to have deep, deep 300-player leagues for him to have any relevance. But unlike Sims and Robinson, I think Aldemir's got the ability to go up. Any take on him?
Yeah, I do. Also, the other guy to throw in there who's probably more of a small forward but can play at the four is Jeremy Grant. Still 21. They're going to need some size off the bench. We saw during the season he had some really good shot-blocking games. So he's probably another one along with Aldemir, as you said, just depending on who's going to get that first spot off the bench.
Now, yeah, Grant's an interesting one because he did have those games where he'd go out there and have massive block numbers. He can hit three-pointers, which was perhaps somewhat unexpected. We didn't necessarily think that he'd hit them. In only 21 minutes, he almost hit 1 3 a game for a guy who was also getting a block a game and over half a steal a game. As a rookie, his percentages were dreadful, 35 and 59, and only 31 from three. not good numbers, but he showed enough to where we think there's something there for him. Now, he also had the opportunity at times to take on bigger roles and excel in those roles, but didn't grasp starting jobs and really take advantage of them at times. His per game numbers at ranked 326 is not great. It improved to 297 after the All-Star game, but that's not really a big improvement. So it's not like he came home flying. But we saw enough for him to be someone that if someone's giving up on him in a dynasty league or offering him for not much, I think there's a little bit there for him. Would you say that they'd go him or Aldemir as the first big off the bench? Or is Aldemir more the guy who's going to play the five and Grant can play the four?
Yeah, probably 3 and 4. Out of those two, in terms of fantasy value, I really like Grant. As you said, the block and threes combination, I think he's just got a lot more there to offer.
I would agree with that. Now, another guy who's listed as a power forward, basically didn't play as power forward, is Jakar Sampson, my boy, the worst player in the NBA.
You still stand by that?
No, because he didn't live up to that during the season. He showed that he was better than two or three other players. Definitely doesn't deserve that moniker. He actually had some decent games. He played more minutes than he probably deserved to, but he was there and he was okay. Let's leave it at that. When you look at his per game head-to-head value at 357, that's not great for a guy who played 74 games. He wasn't able to do a huge amount. His numbers extrapolated out per 36 minutes, he ranks as 296. So even though if he had played more minutes, he just wasn't able to do much production-wise, but he showed that he can be a role player on a bad team. And that's exactly what he was. And that's probably what he'll be again next season, you'd have to think, because he is signed for the next 3 or 4 seasons. On the wings for this team, we have to start with Robert Covington, Bob Cov. A bit of a sensation, a D-League sensation last season, the leading scorer in the D-League. And again, this season signed by the Sixers. He was actually drafted by the Houston Rockets last season. They didn't pick him up. They didn't keep him on their roster. He played Summer League for Houston this year. Didn't get a roster spot, which is fair enough. They're a much stronger team. But he came in and was mighty impressive. It took a lot of people a lot of time to be convinced about Bob Cov. And then once they did, he was solid until the end of the season, which was weird. Matt, what explanation do we have of what happened with him at the end of the season where he got benched and didn't play minutes? Like, is he the team starting three next season?
I'd like to think so. The reason behind his sort of late season benching, maybe sort of running out of legs a little bit, but also Jason Richardson came back and he went into the starting role, and it seemed whenever Richardson played, then Covington was terrible. And those games where Jay Rich missed, then Covington would all of a sudden hit 5 or 6 threes in the game. But Covington was one of the pickups of the season for me. Just looking through some of his splits, and for instance, in February, he averaged 2.3 steals and 2.9 threes. Just insane stats. And even across the season, he reminded me a lot of a guy like Trevor Ariza. Sort of similar points. Ariza's got the edge in rebounding and one more assist, but the steals and threes combination, pretty poor. Field goal percentage, not too bad from the stripe, but just once again, just, I know I harp on this a lot, but Trevor Ariza, you probably had to draft him in the 5th, 6th round, and then you can pick up Robert Covington off the waivers for nothing. It's just another, just goes to show once again, you don't need to search too early and draft the threes, because they are the easiest stat to get off the waiver wire. And once again, these sort of wing players, these small forwards, you can always find them once again off the waiver wire, whether it's Covington, whether it's Wesley Johnson, whether it's like you saw what J.R. Like Smith.
Anyone. Lou Williams you could get off the waiver wire.
Yeah, Lou Williams, these sort of these steals and threes combo guys, they just magically appear somehow year after year after year. So you don't need to go too early to draft them. So Covington was a great add this season, gone. And yeah, he's one I'm sort of got my eye on already going to next season, because I think he can have a really big impact on that in that wing spot.
Well, in just 28 minutes a game, he ranked for me overall value 64th in head-to-head leagues and 70 in roto. So he's the same sort of player in both formats. And even though he had that benching towards the end of the season, he still was the 73rd ranked player for the last month. But his per 36 numbers are what interests me. He's the 40th ranked player if you extrapolate his numbers out to per 36. So his 13.5 points, 2.5 threes, 4.5 rebounds, 1.5 steals, half a block, he's only in 28 minutes. That's not full starters minutes. Even if he gets 32, 33, there's going to be some big numbers there. Jason Richardson, you mentioned that he was impeding what Covington was able to do. He's an unrestricted free agent. He's also 58 years old. I don't think he's going to be back in Philadelphia. I would be shocked. He's definitely not coming back on a $6.6 million contract, which is what they paid him this season. But I don't think he'll be back in Philadelphia. So I'm sure that they view Covington as a piece for the future, an unexpected piece, but definitely a piece. And he's signed long-term through to 2017. They've got a team option on him in 2017 for $1 million, which you're pretty sure they'd pick up. So he's around for the long haul. They didn't have to sign him to that sort of deal because they just picked him up for free. It's not like a rookie-scale contract, but they like what they saw. They gave him a four-year deal, and he definitely started to improve on... Oh, not improve, he impressed. That's the word that I'm looking for. Now, Dynasty Leagues with Covington, if there's someone out there who's a little bit disappointed or not as high on him based on what he did last season, or thinks that, okay, the Sixers were bad, someone had to score, maybe they're going to give a bit of discount, but Covington can be a top 100 player for the next 5 years, I would say relatively comfortably.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And just going back to Trevor Ariza, who rank across playing in every, there is that discrepancy, but Ariza was ranked 28th, whereas I agree with your rankings, like he's in the 60s and 70s, so similar or same position, very similar statistics across the board, and the rankings differ by about 40. So it just goes to show, just don't solely look at rankings or don't solely look at stats. You need to sort of take everything in and form an opinion and basis, and then you can sort of compare each player. You're comparing apples to apples.
Exactly right. Now, also on the wing, Matt, I think, is that all we need to cover with Bob Cove?
Sure.
Let's go to Hollis Thompson, who was an interesting player, a frustrating player. Before Bob Cove came along, Thompson was, he should have been the starting small forward, and he was for a lot of periods of time, but he struggled immensely, and then he'd come out and get ridiculously hot and hit like 5 threes a game for 4 games in a row, and he'd go, what's going on with this guy? And then he would go scoreless for 3 games, and that's pretty much what he is. But the thing is that Philadelphia does like this guy. They like what he can do. They don't think he's finished or he's a dud. They think there's a little bit to what he can do. Now, he's signed for the next couple of seasons. His numbers, they're not that impressive. He's more of a 14 to 16 team league guy, but 174th over the last month, 193rd over the course of the season. He's a guy who can hit three-pointers. There's a little bit of something. He's only a young player. It's his second season. He hit 1.6 threes in 25 minutes, 8 points, almost a steal a game. The percentages are a little bit off, but he can be one of those guys, like you mentioned, that you can stream off the waiver wire, who can hit 2 threes a game over a stretch of 4 or 5 games. And he is someone also that is likely to get better as he gets along, because we're only hitting into his third year in the NBA, which is the time when a lot of players take a big leap. So I'd be expecting some improvement from him in his shooting and some of his other contributions. Even if it is in a 22 to 23 minute game role, he can provide some sort of value for teams, for deep dynasty league teams. So Hollis Thompson has a little bit there, and he is someone who's rubbished quite a lot, although he does provide some numbers. What do you think about Thompson's value?
Yeah, I agree with everything you've said. Just came in, had some really solid games in terms of 3-point shooting. He was on fire there for a while, one of the better 3-point shooters in the Eastern Conference. And once again, there's no reason why he can't do something similar next year if Noel be it, potentially that rookie point guard, and then Covington and Thompson. So yeah, you could do a lot worse than sort of a 12 or 14 team league and taking him with your last pick.
Exactly. Now, one of the other players who's in that small forward mix is Luke Marmute. He is an unrestricted free agent as well. I think the likelihood of them bringing him back at a much smaller deal than the former year is higher than them bringing Thomas Robinson back or Jason Richardson back, mainly for the relationship he has with Joel Embiid, the Cameroonian connection. He was a mentor for Embiid, and from all reports, Embiid needs a little bit of guidance, needs some mentoring. Hasn't been, from what we've heard, obviously this is, I don't work for Philadelphia, speculation that he is a little bit lazy, a little bit of an attitudinal issues, poor rehab, attendance, all that sort of stuff, which obviously isn't great, but Marmute is a veteran in the most veteran-y sense of that word. He's there, he gets his money, he does what he needs to do without being spectacular, and he should be able to impress some of his values upon Embiid. So for that fact alone, he probably will be brought back. And fantasy leagues, Matt, he was someone who had value in, you know, 16-team leagues, or in certain situations where you're punting certain categories. There was times when you had to use Marmute. He was a really decent roto guy. 193rd was his ranking. His per game head-to-head, 221. So we're talking deeper leagues here, but I would imagine he is going to be there in the Sixers for at least another couple of seasons, and he'll play some minutes. He probably won't be the starter next year. Embiid will take that role off him because he started a lot of games for them. But he was someone who was very sneaky. I think that's probably the best way of putting it. What do you think about Marmute? You think he'll be back?
I do, yeah. Sneaky is a great word. He's just one of those guys who, if you don't have him on your team, he's sort of out of sight, out of mind. You don't sort of realize what he's doing. And probably I didn't realize until towards the end of the season when I was actually up against you in the Listener League, and you had him on your team, and he had an awesome week. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute. This guy's got some really good fantasy values, putting up some double-doubles, and he had some games of 2 and 3 and 4 steals, and then he could also hit a three, and he was just putting stats in every category.
Well, I think something that would surprise you about Marmute is that he was the Sixers' third leading highest scorer behind Bob Cove and Tony Roden. He was also their second highest rebounder behind Thomas Robinson. Oh, sorry, third highest behind Thomas Robinson and Nerlens Noel.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure that's a shock for a lot of people. He also got over a steal a game, 1.2 steals. His percentages weren't great, but he didn't take that many shots. But he was a guy who could easily get you 5 or 6 rebounds, 1 to 2 steals. He had stretches where he'd get steals in 5 or 6 games in a row, and almost hit a 3 a game as well. So there was definitely a little bit of value for him, and I imagine that he will be back and providing something moving forward. Don't know what it will be, but he'll be there doing something. Shooting guards. We've touched on Jason Richardson before. There's not really much to talk about with him. He had that knee injury, then sort of snuck up on everyone and came back and played 19 games and had some decent performances. 1.6 triples in 22 minutes a game, 9 points. Not much else from him. He was just a guy who was hitting threes. His main contribution to fantasy leagues was hurting Robert Covington. I don't think we need to have any consideration for him for next season at all, but it was a bit of a surprise. And deeper leagues, 16, 18, 20-team leagues, should definitely have pounced on him towards the end of last season. Glenn Robinson III was another player that they had. He did not excite anybody. Is there anything for Glenn Robinson III after he was waived by Minnesota?
No, I wouldn't think so. Another one who's a restricted free agent, so I'd be pretty surprised if he first of all stays with Philly, and then maybe even if he's in the NBA full stop.
Yep, now I know a lot of teams like to use my rankings when deciding to hand out contracts. He was ranked 458th in per game head-to-head value, so that's pretty close to the bottom. There's not many after 458. I don't even know off the top of my head how many there were, but I reckon 3 or 4 may have been worse than him on a per game basis. That's not great. Point guard. This is interesting. I think that's the best way of saying it. There's 3 point guards on this roster at the moment. Now, Ish Smith is one of them. He's an unrestricted free agent. Tony Roden, your boy, he's not. He's under contract for 1 more season. Isaiah Cannon, same story, under contract for 1 more season. I'll let you tell the Tony Roden story. What do we think for him next season?
Well, let's just go back to the start of this season, because we had Michael Carter-Williams, who sort of came into the season with a shoulder injury / concern, and then Tony Roten sort of got the start. And in 30 games, 30 minutes, he averaged 17 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 1.6 steals, 1.2 threes. His percentages were terrible, but his first month or so was brilliant, and to get teams off to that sort of that hot start for the season, he was superb and a great pickup. Next season, excuse me, man, if they draft, do get Russell at 3, and they've got 4, well, three and maybe four point guards slash, well, they got, in the end, they're actually combo guards because Russell can play both. Tony Roten can play off the ball. Isaiah Cannon can move over.
Tony Roten doesn't know what it's like to play off the ball. I'm sure he could, but he's an absolute dominator of the ball. That's not a good thing.
Isaiah Cannon can drop him from deep on the wing as well. So, I'll hold my judgment until draft day to see what they do. But I think even if they do take Russell, I can still see Roten having some sneaky deep team value or deep league value off the bench. For once again, the sort of the points assist steals combo. Not too sure what's going to happen with Ish Smith yet. And Isaiah Cannon's the other one who may be on the outer. I think I'd have Roten in front of those two guys.
Okay, now, Roten, it's pointless looking at his total value because he didn't play enough games. But his per-game value, 78th. Now, I don't like Tony Roten. I don't like his fantasy game a lot. I hate his real-life game. It's just, it is so hard to watch. You just want to jump through the TV and go, can you just stop being a dickhead? Because it's just, it is brutal. He is just someone who shoots but can't shoot. It's Josh Smith in a smaller body, basically, and without the defense. So it's brutal watching him. But as a head-to-head league, if you're punting percentages, and you've got to be punting both because he takes a lot of shots and he misses a lot of shots, the points, the assists, the rebounds, he's a triple-double threat a lot of the time. Look, he averaged 16.9 points in 30 minutes over a three rebounds, five assists, 1.6 steals, which is something he'd never really been good at. He's getting steals, and he picked that up this season. But 40 and 67%, and 26 from deep, and he took five attempts a game. That's why I hate him. Like, you're Josh Smith. You can't shoot, but he's still taking five threes a game. Like, Covington's only taking six threes a game, and he's hitting 2.5 of them. He's hitting them at 37%. You're hitting them at 26%, Tony Roten. But you're right. It depends on what they do in the draft, whether Roten has value. You would think that Russell would be the pick, and he would get preference to Roten, and he'd be he'd probably be the first rookie off the board, in my opinion. I think that if he goes to Philadelphia, and Roten can have some value, but the presence of Cannon and Smith complicates it slightly for me, because Smith developed a real chemistry with Nerlens Noel towards the end of the season, and he was dishing out a lot of assists. Isaiah Cannon is someone who can shoot, and this team needs people who can shoot. Aside from Covington, there's not many guys who can shoot on this team. Hollis Thompson. Okay, Roten can't shoot. They need. That's why they got rid of Michael Carter Williams, because he can't shoot. And the opportunity to get almost a top, potentially a top five pick, was too good to pass up. But he can't shoot. Ish Smith's not a great shooter, but he was a really decent distributor. And Cannon can shoot, so they are going to be. They're going to be stacked, but stacked with mediocrity, maybe is the best way of putting it. With Smith, Cannon, and Roten there. And it'd be interesting to see how it works out. I wouldn't be surprised to see Roten's numbers come down in a per game. I think they definitely will come down from that 78th. There's no way that'll stick, because you will have that rookie there, and I think he will play off the ball a little bit more. He'll be forced to, and won't have the ball in his hand as much, which is what he really needs to get things going. Okay, here's a question. Would you be looking to acquire Tony Roten in a dynasty-type format? And what sort of player would you be looking at? Is he a top 100 player? Is he a top 150 player?
Yeah, he's probably getting close to more sort of 120, 150. There's just some major red flags. One, coming off the ACL. Two, his role next season. Three, if they've got Russell, Smith, Cannon, then he could become trade material and end up at the bottom of a Clippers roster or something, or I don't know. But there's just... Yeah, there's too many ifs, buts, and candy nuts to take any sort of risks on in a dynasty league, unless you're sort of trading your last pick or something will fly. But I wouldn't
trading the 60th pick in a rookie draft.
Yeah,
that's fine. But I wouldn't be trading too much of value, because I think he drops a bit. And we talk about Smith and Cannon. The last month of the season, Ish Smith was the 90th ranked player. Isaiah Cannon was the 115th ranked player. They were able to put some decent numbers up. Cannon with his three pointers, he hit almost two a game in 20 minutes over the course of the season. That's a lot of three pointers. Ish Smith got us a lot of assists. Now, his overall season numbers don't look that high. He played 15 minutes a game and got 3.3 assists. But when you look at what these guys were able to do towards the end of the season, the last 3 months of the season, Isaiah Cannon hit 2.5 threes in 24 minutes a game. 11.6 points, only 3 assists. His game was hitting threes. Ish Smith, on the other hand, in the last month of the season, or the last 2 months after the trade deadline when he came across, 6.1 assists, 12 points, 0.7 threes, 1.3 steals. Numbers that made these guys both must-own players in pretty much all leagues. Would you agree with that?
Yes, correct.
They're going to take a hit, though. Yeah, I think there's no doubt about that. But one of them is going to retain that primary backup point guard. And I think even though he's a free agent, I wouldn't be shocked. I would think they would bring Smith back. I really like what he was able to do with Nerlens Noel last season. The chemistry, the alley-oops, I think it worked really, really well, having someone who's a pure distributor getting the ball into him and giving him better looks and feeding him in the paint. And with someone else in there like Embiid, I think Smith's going to have a role. He's a better creator than what Roten is and what Cannon is, and most likely whoever the rookie is that they bring in, he'll be a better creator. So I think that he'll likely be the primary backup. That will be my guess. They'll bring him back on a cheap contract, and I think he'd be the primary guy, whereas Cannon will be a backup, sort of a backup two to hit shots, basically. That would be the way that I would look at it. How do you see it? Do you think they bring Smith back?
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think, once again, out of those three, Roten's probably got the more trade value, so they can sort of move him for a late, you know.
I would say there's a massive chance he gets traded.
Yeah, I think so too. And then just opens up with Smith and then Cannon to spread the floor as well. So we'll see what happens. It's gonna be interesting. And if they do get Russell, I won't sort of give too much away now for the draft podcast. But he could be something pretty special next season in terms of fantasy.
He would be the top rookie, I would say. I think he'd be a top 70 guy.
I will agree with you. Yeah,
we'll get into that more as we get closer to the draft. But there's a couple of questions. We've gone through all the players on the Sixers now, and all the players that ended the season on the Sixers roster. We've gone through all their fantasy value. A couple of questions. Jared on Twitter at JaredJ831. Pretty straightforward question here, Matt. When will they be good? Or at least, when will they stop being atrocious? I'm going to say next season. They won't be good, but they won't be atrocious.
Yeah, I'm hoping same.
Just think about this lineup. Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid.
Yep.
Robert Covington, D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
They're not great, but it's fun. And it's exciting, and there's definite, genuine talent there. Like genuine. And then, or if it's not next season, it's the season after when Dario Saric comes across.
Definitely 2016, 2017.
And
plus,
then with another lottery pick involved in that as well.
And the salary cap jumps up, and they get Kevin Durant, and then it's on.
Yeah, that's on the cards. Durant to the Sixers. You heard it here first. Remember that, guys.
They've got to make a big splash in free agency somewhere along the line.
And that's the thing, that they can't make big splashes in free agency now because no one wants to come to a shit heap like this. But with Noel, Embiid, let's just say Russell Moutier, whoever it is out of those guys, Covington, Saric, plus the two lottery picks next season, they'll probably get the Lakers lottery pick. They've got a Heat lottery pick coming towards them at some stage, most likely, plus their own lottery pick. It's a really, really decent core. And then all they need is one, not even a upper Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook echelon guy, even if it's stepped down. Imagine if they had gotten someone. I know this was never on the cards, but a player to the caliber of Gordon Hayward, like that sort of level guy, comes across, adds in with all these young guys, and you've got it, the making of an Eastern Conference playoff team, at least. In 2 to 3 years' time, they could be an 8th seed, I would say.
Yep, I agree with
so
that.
So this year, they're going to be fun. They're going to be a team to watch on League Pass. Just watching Embiid, watching Noel take it to another level, he could have a massive increase in what he's able to do. I think that he'll be a really fun player. Watching Russell, or even if they draft Moutier, Moutier's just super athletic. He can't shoot, but he's like Tony Roten, but with more basketball conscience.
So what happens then if Towns or Okafor or somehow fall to three? Do they still draft them and load up on bigs and then look to trade one, or do they still take point guard?
No, I think they have to take a guard. You know, because Towns, he's given you very similar to Noel, better offensive game, but defensively he's Noel. He can be that. He can be Noel defensively.
Mm-hmm. Blocks wise, yeah.
Okafor is a different situation. If he fell to three, that makes it a little bit more interesting to me because that will give them an offensive scorer down low. And pairing him with Noel and Embiid as, the big man off the bench, I think would be interesting. Then they can trade it, but they've still got a massive hole in the backcourt. I know that you always say take talent first, take the best player overall, mm-hmm. but I'd still be inclined to take Russell. What do you think?
And then the Knicks just finally get a win and get Okafor or Towns at four. Imagine that.
Yeah, that's true. It'd be a conundrum, I'd say that. I can't see either of the Timberwolves or the Lakers allowing those two guys to go through, but it's a possibility. Now, Matt, one more question. Tim, on email, he sent me a question in through the Lakers pod, and he sent me a similar one here, talking about me and Tim are in a 30-team dynasty league, and we had that situation where you picked an NBA team, and then you got to pick one player from that team. So he's saying, if you're starting a dynasty, and you've got the Sixers, which I had in that league last season, who do you start off a dynasty fantasy league with? Do you start with Noel? Do you start with Embiid? Do you start with Bob Cove? Do you start with Moutier/Russell? Saric? Who do you start with? Who's the fantasy foundation?
I'm still going to tag Nealon's Noel.
Oh, I would agree.
It's easy to say that because of what he did this year, but he was just that good defensively, and he can lock down blocks and steals for the next 10 years for your fantasy team.
That's the thing.
Embiid might come in next year and blow us away again, but also he's got that injury risk. At least we've seen that season of New Orleans Noel. He's got through, looked fit, looked healthy, looked like, you know, injuries behind him. We've mentioned Russell and we really like what he can do there, but yeah, New Orleans Noel's got to be the pick if you're drafting tomorrow.
I would agree with that because it's just what we've seen, as you said, but those steal and block numbers, it's unrivaled. It's almost unprecedented. And we're talking, you know, the last person who able to do it is Hakeem Olajuwon. That's pretty exalted territory. And to get two steals a game and two blocks a game, it's amazing. And then he's got the upside of points and rebounds and those other things which can come along as well. And he's not a bad passer. Not a great passer, but he's not a bad passer. And he could get himself up to three assists a game. He only had 1.7, but he's not a horrible passer. So I think Noel is the guy that you'd take in that situation. I agree with you there, Matt. Anything else you want to cover regarding the Philadelphia 76ers before we sign off?
I think that's about all. Just on those post-All-Star stats for Nealon's Noel, he actually had more steals than Chris Paul after the All-Star break.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's ridiculous. This guy's 6'11".
Yeah, 2.3 blocks, 2.1 steals.
And it's because he knows what he's doing. Like it's not luck. Like he came into the season being, this guy is going to be a massive contributor in steals. We knew that. Because he knows how to position. He knows where to put his arms. He knows how to play passing lanes. He's very, very, he's athletically gifted, but he's very switched on to defensive positioning. And that enables him to get these numbers. And they will go up. This is going to be his second season. He's going into his third season the year after. That these numbers are going to get better. He can be a 15-point, 10-rebound guy with 2.5 blocks, 2.5 steals. That's not crazy. It sounds stupid to say that you're going to get 2.5 blocks, 2.5 steals, and 15 and 10, but that's not. That's top 10. That's a top 10 fantasy guy.
If he does do that, then he is. Like you said, he's a first-round pick. Guaranteed.
Absolutely. And those numbers aren't. You know, he was 10 and 8 this season. He can go 15 and 10, 2.5, 2.5. It's not insane. And he only played 30 minutes a game. There's a lot of upside for him, as there is for most of this team, but Nerlens Noel is the more exciting one at this stage.
I can't believe the Suns drafted Alex Len before him.
Well, how do you think the Cavs are feeling taking Anthony Bennett over him?
Yeah, well, that's true.
The only team I think that would be pretty happy with their pick would be Oladipo and the Magic, I would say.
Yeah.
But even so, Noel's still probably got a higher ceiling than Oladipo.
I was thinking about Oladipo the other day. He's in for a big season next year.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think you'll be looking at in the top 30, but he'll finish in the top 20.
Yep, agree. Spot on, yeah.
He'll be very interesting.
Magic are going to be one of those teams who are going to surprise a lot of teams. Vucevic, Depot, Payton, if they can get Harris, get another good player in the draft. Oladipo.
That's a great segue, Matt, because the next podcast on this in this season in review series is going to be the Orlando Magic. You didn't know that, but that's a fantastic segue because they will be the next team that I'm talking about. So there will be some there'll be some definite discussion and probably some hyperbole thrown around about Victor Oladipo for me. I'm certain. Matt, where can everybody find you in the social medias?
Social media. It's just Twitter for me, at S-Man Sports. So, come and chat about NBA Finals, Steph Curry, Matthew Dellavedova, LeBron James cramping, draft free agency, Josh's beard, anything and everything. Email at what is my email? smansports@hotmail.com.
Yep. Yeah. You can tell you use that one a lot.
Yeah, important one. So if you do have any questions, I check that every now and then. But yeah, Twitter's probably the main place. I don't post photos of my dogs and food like Josh does on Instagram.
I don't have a dog and I don't eat, so that counts out. Oh. I'm a vampire.
Josh, Lloyd.
Quick tip, finals. Who's going to win?
The Warriors are going to win. Steph Curry is unbelievable. The end.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, we touched on it during the podcast that myself, Matt, and Mark Roberts will be doing a mock draft podcast, date TBA. It'll be probably the week before the draft. We will do a mock draft of the first round. I'm also most likely going to be having some NBA draft discussion go up on the RotoWire site in the next couple of days. Myself and a couple of guys there, Nick Whalen and James Anderson, are doing a chat on some draft prospects. So you'll see that go up. And I've also got a mock draft published over there as well, along with a couple of other guys who've got mock drafts published. I think James has got one and one other person who I cannot recall, so I apologize, who else has got a mock draft posted over on RotoWire. You know where to find me on social media. Make sure you're subscribing on iTunes and telling all your friends how cool and sexy we are so they can subscribe as well. Matt, it was great hearing your voice again and having you back on the podcast. And I apologize that your Russell Westbrook prize-winning jersey still has not arrived. I don't know where it's coming from. I think Russell's sewing it himself.
That's all right. Just if he's got it, just get him to sign it. I don't need it at the moment because it's the middle of winter, so as long as it gets here by sort of October, November, it's all sweet.
If it's not here by next week, I'm going to be asking some questions. But you will see it soon, and Matt will get the jersey, and he will post photos of it on Twitter just to show that I am a man of my word eventually. Matt, say goodbye to everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.